Dude.
I guess you've got a point there.
This is Sports Sunday.
Hey, Skid Mark Steve.
Hey, dude.
You still just hanging out playing Nintendo?
Well, if you must know, I'm in my second year of med school, and I'm training for the summer games. What are you two up to?
Hanging out, playing Nintendo.
A recap of the sports week, a preview of today's games, and next week's big stories.
Do you think Shaq got rich playing in Orlando? Hardly. He made his fortune moving to L.A. You know how much he makes now?
As much as he made playing in college?
What? No.
Now, here are Rashad Taylor and Joe Fisher.
What happened out there?
You know, it was a team effort, and I guess it took every player working together to lose this one.
Thanks, Doug. And so...
Hey, you want to do an interview with me?
No.
With Sports Sunday on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
Bob, in all my years of calling games, I don't think I've ever been this excited.
You're excited? Feel these nipples.
Hour number two. Football Sunday right here on 1080 The Fan. 99.5 HD2, the Odyssey app, YouTube, and Twitch for the kids. Red Zone is on the TV. 1080 The Fan is hopefully on your dials or on the Odyssey app. And my nips are hard as well. This is, we made it to October. It is prime sports season. Best month on the calendar. I mean, the only thing that we need left, Jordan, to make this the best month is just Blazers basketball to start, right?
Not really looking forward to that. But preseason opener is on Friday. Shaedon Sharpe already out for 4 to 6 weeks. I left that out of my sports update because there's so much football. But the Blazers season ending possibly again before it began. Now, we don't want them to get wins. We want them to be tanking, right? Like, yeah, they need the number one overall pick so they can get Cooper Flagg. But, yeah, we need to see Shaedon Sharpe on the freaking court. And after hearing some great reports of offseason development from him and then a couple other reports of Scoot Henderson not having the best offseason, I'm shocked. But once again, that's the guy that the franchise gave up on Damian Lillard, the best player in franchise history for. But hey, preseason opener this Friday. There you go.
Listen, we'll get back into college football here in a second, but I do want to share the tweet from Blazers France, the French Blazers Twitter account for the French fan base there. And it translates, this tweet was from, I believe it was from yesterday afternoon. And it translated to, thank you for following this 24-25 season with us. Now, let's move on to the lottery.
That's fantastic.
Hey, I love it. No brevity on that. Just go straight for it, okay? Just tell people, like, listen, yes, we're excited for the season to be back, NBA basketball to be back, but as soon as we can get this done and get to the lottery, the better. All right? I think it'll be better for everybody involved. And
I wish they could say it publicly. I wish any team that's going for it could say it publicly.
Well, yeah, Blazers France, they can go for it. But
no, I mean the organization itself.
Oh, I wish this was straight from the Blazers Twitter account as well. Like, all right, guys, bear with us for the next few months. Let's just get to the lottery for the long
run. But we even heard GM Joe Cronin kind of lean that way, at least in his going into the offseason comments last year, said like, hey, you know what? Yeah, we're probably not going to be good for a while. We are looking to the future. Not is his exact words, but essentially what he said in a nutshell. And then literally right after him, Coach Chauncey Billups being like, well, I think this young team can compete for the playoffs. It's just like, God!
I think people need to be more like Jakob Poeltl for the Toronto Raptors. I believe that's who it was in the preseason, the media day press conference that he had, where he was basically like, yeah, I don't think anybody thinks that we're going to be competing for a championship this year. So, you know, however we can just develop our young guys.
Nice like, answer.
He literally just came out and said, he's like, yeah, I don't think that anybody sees us as a threat here. But
and he's not stating, I don't think the NBA can even fine him for that. He's literally stating facts. He's like, I'm just reading what people are writing.
All right, back to college football here.
No, let's keep bitching about the Blazers. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. No, let's get back to football, please.
We'll have 8 months to do that. So the night was capped off with an almost upset. It was almost our sixth top 11 team to go down last night. And we were oh so close. Cal Miami, it was the college game day. I mean, I haven't seen Cal Stadium filled up like that ever it seems like.
It was nuts. I've been there, and it's been mostly empty every time I've been there.
So the fact that they were able to fill that stadium up, I know there was a good chunk of Miami fans, but still, that stadium was filled to the brim. And Cal, they just come out all guns a-blazing. I mean, how many yards after catch did that offense have? Because it seemed like Jaden Ott had like at least 100 by himself. They jump out to a 35-10 lead in that game. It was definitely a point where I'm like, this, Miami, they ain't coming back in this. Well, the final score, Miami 39-38. With probably a little help from the referees.
Yeah.
A lot of help from the referees, because one of the big plays, controversial plays at the end there, was a targeting call that was not called. They went and reviewed it, actually. The quarterback for Cal, he goes on a run, Fernando Mendoza, and just gets absolutely ear-holed over the middle as he's running. And
helmet to helmet contact, mind you.
Yes. And he goes out of the game. They then say the play is getting reviewed for potential targeting. I mean, it checked multiple boxes for targeting, launching his body, hitting him with the 6-inch radius at the top of the crown of the helmet, and helmet to helmet. Like, it was, and that would have probably been it for Miami, because that was on a third down play. That would have given Cal an automatic first down. They probably wouldn't have been able to run out the clock, not kneel it, but probably just run a couple plays to kill some more clock. But the ball gets back to Miami, and sure enough, Cal's defense, who gave up 575 yards last night, they gave up a total of 92 on that final drive, including leaving Xavier Restrepo just wide open for a huge chunk play that was like 60, 70 yards. Like, just,
oh yeah,
how he gets wide open
on a screen pass. No. It was a screen pass, brother.
That was over the middle. It was like, it was off to the left. Yeah, he dropped it in over the defense. It was,
and then it was just like 40, 50 yards free. Unbelievable.
Yeah. It was, again, it was devastating to see. There was definitely a point where I think it was when Cam Ward threw the pick six. He was booting out right, scrambling to the right, and then he decides to say, you know what? Watch this. I'm going to throw this ball across the field and complete this pass. Well, he did complete it right into a Cal defender's arms. They ended up housing it. That's when they go up 28-10. And then Miami punts. Cal scores again. They go up 35-10. So it was 35-10 at the 8:06 mark in the third quarter. 25 points, Miami's down. This is their next four drives. Touchdown, 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 touchdown. Also, if you go back and watch the final touchdown that they score to win the game, Miami has two offensive linemen. Like, I think the play was from the 5-yard line. Yeah, they were at Cal's 5. They had two offensive linemen at the goal line by the time that Cam Ward lets that ball go. Like, not just one illegal man downfield, two illegal men downfield. It was clear as day. So Miami, with the benefit of the refs at the end of the game, just deciding to check out. I mean, hey, it was a long day. All right. Maybe they were East Coasters and it was 2:30 in the morning for them too. But Miami narrowly escapes Cal. Cal's offense goes cold the rest of the game and lets Miami get back into it. Just an absolutely devastating loss for Cal. Miami escapes for the second week in a row, and we almost had six top 11 teams in the country all lose yesterday.
I was really,
and that would have been one of the best. Now Cal did cover, which I loved that all this week. I think it was like 10.5 at some points, and I love Cal covering. But man, if you had just Cal money line at any point, prayers, brother.
You were crying like Kade Ulave, right, at the end of that game yesterday. That was pretty sad to see. It's like, well, then you stop them on any of the three drives that you just let them score on. Like, I'm sorry, I don't feel for you at that point.
But
yes,
that dude, he had like 80 tackles last night.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he gave it his all. And they still, in the last three drives, allowed Miami to just do whatever they wanted. And, what are you going to do when, I think the last play, when they did hit that 50-yard bomb or 77-yard bomb down the field or whatever, I don't think that they called the same defense that they had throughout the game previously. It was like all of a sudden they went to zone. Like, they were man-to-man most of the game, but that zone defense call allowed Miami. Like, Cam Ward just saw the space, and like you said, yeah, Restrepo, or I can't pronounce his name correctly.
Restrepo.
Restrepo, thank you. Need to remember that. Restrepo, because he's good. Yeah, he was literally just wide open. There was nobody, and then I don't think anybody was able to catch him for like 30 yards.
Yeah, that play, again, that was a huge chunk play for them that got them. I mean, they started that drive at the Cal 8-yard line at the end of the game there.
Looked sunk. Looked done.
I mean, they looked done at multiple points of the game, especially, again, when Cam Ward threw that pick six. I was like, oh my God, you cannot do that. Cam Ward is having the most, like, Cam Ward season in a sense that he just has dumb mistakes. I mean, like, last week against Virginia Tech, he had, like, 3 or 4 turnovers and still ended up just pulling a rabbit out of his hat at the end of the game and winning that. So, Miami, they remain undefeated. Cal, oh, God, that would have been so great for Josh Wilcox. And, Justin Wilcox, not the former 1080 The Fan. Wait, hold on. Am I getting the Wilcox mixed up here? Justin is the coach of Cal.
Yeah, Justin Wilcox is the Cal coach.
Yeah, Josh is the former 1080 The Fan on-air personality, brother of Justin Wilcox.
Well, and he kind of thought going into that game that Justin Wilcox had Mario Cristobal earmarked a bit, right? They faced each other before when Mario was with Oregon in the Pac-10, Pac-12, whatever. So I do think that people didn't have Cal even, you know, with a breath of a chance in this game. But, like, I was pretty excited going in, and yeah, they almost did it, right?
Well, it's funny.
Almost.
My girlfriend noticed at the end of the game when Mario and Wilcox shook hands. She's like, oh, boy, the head coaches, they did not. And she's like, that was a really quick handshake. They didn't. I'm like, something tells me that Justin Wilcox does not like Mario Cristobal at all. I was like, my guess is that, yeah, they've had conversations over the years from when, obviously, Mario was in the Pac-12. They were in the Pac-12 together as head coaches. And also, I'm sure Justin Wilcox probably wasn't a fan of how he handled his departure at Oregon, which, regardless of him not being a Oregon coach at all ever in his career, Justin Wilcox, he still has ties to that school and fan base.
He took a call from Rob Mullins after that happened. So it affected, I think Mario leaving for Oregon did affect his life. He had to answer questions from the Cal media. He had to, him and his family had to deal with that crap for a month or so.
Thanks for that, douche.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Mario, F you. No, honestly, I think I'd feel that same way too. It's like, you handled this with zero class. You now brought me into this dramatic fray that you started. So yeah, F you.
So Cal, prayers to you, buddy. I mean, that was just rough way to lose that game. You give up a 25-point lead in the third quarter, and Miami escapes again. And still undefeated, 6-0. Very intrigued to see how this top 25 shakes out here, which should be coming out before the end of the hour. But I am very intrigued to see how it shapes up, because, boy, oh boy, do we have quite the matchup here in Eugene coming up that could be, and it's looking like, will be a top 25, or excuse me, top 5 matchup this Saturday at Autzen. We'll get into that next here, Football Sunday, 1080 The Fan. This Saturday in Eugene, College Game Day, they will be on campus. Ohio State, they will be at Autzen Stadium for one of the biggest matchups in Oregon Ducks history. Ohio State at Oregon. Man, I mean, first, let's start with Oregon going into this game. Interesting game against Michigan State, where they ended up pulling away late in the game. Ohio State, their game against Iowa, interesting start. It was only 7-0 at halftime. They pull away in that one. Very intriguing to see which quarterback comes out and plays the best, because I feel like that is where this game will be determined, is quarterback play. Because Dylan Gabriel, bud, you got to start figuring out some things in the red zone. I gave him a pass against UCLA, that pick six. I mean, Tez Johnson slipped. I think as he was throwing that, it was one of those, like, too little, too late. I let go of this ball. And, you know, now Tez is on the ground and it's literally going right to UCLA player. But two red zone picks against a team like Michigan State, just inexcusable. And that's a trend I want to end immediately. On the Ohio State side of things, they have playmakers all over that offense. I just wonder how good of a quarterback Will Howard is when he starts playing better competition. and especially against this Ducks defense, who I said earlier this year that they are going to keep them in a lot of games this year. And just barely, they almost they gave up a touchdown late in the game against Michigan State. But we almost had two straight weeks of the Oregon defense not give up an offensive touchdown. I mean, they have just been nails this entire season so far. And quite frankly, I just feel like this is going to come down to quarterback play. I mean, Jordan James, that rushing attack is starting to come on. You would maybe like a little bit more explosive plays. You saw a couple of them on Michigan State against Michigan State in the run game, but he ended up going for what, 162 rushing yards, I think he finished with?
166, yeah. 66, yeah.
I mean, absolutely great performance by him. But Will Howard, he needs to, and the thing is he is benefits from just having dudes all around him. I mean, you have a two-headed monster at running back in Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson. You've got a dual-headed monster at wide receiver as well with Emeka Egbuka and the freshman wide receiver, Jeremiah Smith.
I think Egbuka had like three touchdowns yesterday.
He did. So I am just intrigued to see how Will Howard does against this Oregon defense, who has been absolutely locked down so far. The question is how does the defense do against those skill players? Because if you're able to fluster Will Howard and get to him and get sacks, get him out of the pocket, have him feeling pressure, that's going to be that'll help. But what are these receivers going to do against the DBs? Are they going to be able to get open, get separation? What's the line of scrimmage battle going to be like as far as this offensive line for Ohio State versus Oregon's defensive line? Very intrigued to see how that goes. But with all that being said, I cannot wait for Saturday. This is going to be one of the easily the biggest game I've ever gone to at Autzen. And I just can't wait. This is what everybody has been waiting for since the schedule was released last year. I mean, this is what everybody's been waiting for a few years now after this game had to get postponed or rescheduled because of COVID and everything.
Yeah.
We obviously had Oregon go to Ohio State a few years ago and get the win there. But then this game has been pushed back, and now we're finally getting it, and we are just 6 days away from Oregon, Ohio State at Autzen. 4:30 kickoff. It's going to be on NBC. I need to definitely make sure I pace myself throughout the day because it is going to be a party. It's going to be one of the best tailgate environments. Just can't wait. Absolutely can't wait.
I am very nervous about this weekend. Excited.
Oh,
obviously,
I am too.
This is going to be one of the biggest games, in Oregon history. But Dylan Gabriel, not only is he coming off probably one of the worst performances, like interception-wise, of his career, but now they're going into, you know, one of Oregon's biggest games ever and probably Dan Lanning's biggest game ever as Oregon head coach to this point. Dylan Gabriel's supposed to be like the guy with experience, right? We heard he is not, you know, he is not going to be fooled by any defense coming into this season, that there is nothing that a defense can throw at him that he hasn't seen. That's what we heard about this five-year veteran coming in. He's literally about to break Kellen Moore's all-time touchdown passing record.
I think it was Case Keenum.
Case Keenum.
Well, maybe Kellen Moore.
I think Kellen
Moore's
second. Yeah, so he's about to break Kellen's, or he's about to get to that point and then get to Case Keenum. What? He's like eight behind him. So Dylan Gabriel has the experience to know what he's doing. Yet against Michigan State, who has a very stout run defense, which thankfully Oregon ran over last weekend on Friday, but I was surprised to see Dylan struggling so much to make decisions, because basically those two interceptions were late decisions by him, which were also, you know, kind of the same thing that he was doing earlier in the season when he was getting sacked, waiting too long to throw the ball, waiting too long to make a decision. And guess what? Ohio State is the top-ranked defense in the country, Joe. I'm stoked to see Oregon's offense and what they do, and Oregon's defense is going to give Ohio State, going to give them a battle, especially after what we saw against Michigan State. But I am so scared of Dylan Gabriel's talent and what he is actually going to do against this really good team. They have not played anybody like this all season.
Well, this is where I wonder, it's you know, if you can keep the ball out of Ohio State's hands and win that time of possession battle comfortably. You know, that's, you know, for a lack of better comparisons, but I mean, you look at the Vanderbilt game yesterday, that's how they're able to hold Alabama in check, is we're going to control the time of possession. by a lot. I mean, we saw how they beat Ohio State a few years ago is we're going to run the ball. We're going to hold on to the ball. We're going to keep the ball. We're not going to give this ball up.
Do you see what the time of possession was versus Michigan State? Almost even? For Oregon v. Michigan State on Friday, it was literally a minute difference. And some of that was like late in the fourth quarter, you know, Michigan State just kind of had the ball and couldn't score. But it was that way like going into halftime too, Joe. And that's one thing that I really think Oregon with the running game should be able to pace it, should be able to hold on to the ball longer. But Oregon's offense is not playing like, not like at full strength. Like, of course they can score, but they're not doing everything that the offense can do. And that really involves controlling the game. And to win against one of the best teams in the country, you can't not do that. That's not an option to fail at that.
Well, I feel like that is a winning formula for Oregon at this point, is don't put too much pressure on Dylan Gabriel. Run the ball and lean on your defense. I mean, the defense has had some moments this year where they've had to be out on the field a lot, and they have answered the call seemingly the entire year. Just been absolutely super impressed with how they've played so far. So try and keep them off the field as much as possible. But when they are on the field, trust that they're going to be able to lock down these receivers who seem to be able to get open against anybody. Keep the running back in this offensive line in check on Ohio State, which they have a great offensive line as well. I mean, I hear you. I'm nervous as well. I mean, right now, Ohio State is the favorite. I don't know by how many points. I haven't looked just yet. I mean, I can imagine they're probably, what, 3.5, 4.5 point favorites going to this? Yeah, they're 3.5.
Yeah.
But I would just say that the quarterback play, whoever is able to make the least amount of mistakes at the quarterback position, that's going to be the difference in this game. Because, again, Will Howard, he's a great quarterback, but he's not a world beater. He is not a dynamic player like a Milrow or a Cam Ward. I mean, he's not going to be running all over the place. His stats are they're pretty comparable to Gabriel's this year. I mean, he has just over 1,200 passing yards, 12 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Gabriel, I think, has got 11 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, just over 1,100 yards passing. As far as him rushing the ball goes, again, I just don't think that he is much of a threat with his legs. And, you know, as far as, like, Gabriel, too, it's like, yeah, he can run, but that's not where he's going to burn you. It's going to be his accuracy, and hopefully that he just has a game that he gets up for. And it's almost like last year with the Red River rivalry, where Oklahoma was able to rise to the occasion to beat Texas. And hopefully that's what we get, is basically Dylan Gabriel rising to the occasion. He's been great this year, but these last 2 weeks with those interceptions and those mistakes in the red zone, we got to stop. That has to end. We have to get it together. We have to figure out how to limit those mistakes, and that's what is going to be the key to the game, I believe, is quarterback play and who makes the least amount of mistakes and plays most efficiently.
You wonder if Will Stein's going to like put Dylan Gabriel out in the open space running a little bit more, because we've already seen him running way more than Bo Nix did last year. But I'm kind of scared that's because of the height difference. Bo Nix is what, 6'3", 6'4"?
Well, Gabriel's what, like 195, 200 pounds? Like, I can't imagine that he is like... You know, he's a smaller guy. Like, you can get him absolutely crushed out there. And
yeah.
So that would be a concern there as far as, you know, trying to give him a lot of work. And Gabriel actually has over 1,400 passing yards this year. Excuse me. Yeah, he's 6 foot, 200 pounds, compared to Will Howard, 6'3", 235. I'm just, yeah.
Can I, one of my really good friends that used to be on the equipment staff for Oregon's football team back in the day, he just texted me, said, imagine paying $1 million plus for a fifth-year quarterback and saying Oregon's game plan should be not to put too much pressure on Dylan Gabriel. And I hear you saying that because of the performance that he just had, but like, I think that's kind of going to my point. It's like, that is a joke, at least the thought process of trying not to put too much pressure on this guy that they gave the most money to bring on their team. Go look at the NCAA football rating that College 25 that the game EA Sports gave him at the beginning of the season.
Like a 93.
Yeah, 92, 93. He was literally the best statistical quarterback in all the country coming in. And we thought, well, talent-wise, that means he is also the best quarterback coming into this season. And it has been proven absolutely wrong. So I guess it's just frustrating now that we do know. I think you're right. It is a joke, though. And now to this point, we know Oregon has to, yeah, lean on their defense. But really, if it's a win, it's because of Evan Stewart and Tez Johnson and Jordan James and the offensive line and Dylan Gabriel in the defense. It's not specifically because of Dylan Gabriel. And I think that's what's scaring Duck fans is I'm not sure Dylan Gabriel singularly is the player that can lead you to a win like Bo Nix was.
Well, and I don't want to overreact from one game, right? Like, this was a bad... It was... And I'm not even going to say it was a bad game Dylan Gabriel. I mean, they were able to rack up a ton of yards. They were in, I mean, again, while they are red zone turnovers, they're in the red zone. That should have been a 45-17 game because, you know, keep in mind, Michigan State fumbled at the 1 yard line early in the game, too. So, I mean, really, they should have an extra touchdown there, too.
That's true.
So it should have been a 44-17 type of game, final score. But that's the thing is that, hopefully this is just a flash in the pan as far as bad performance goes for Dylan Gabriel. I mean, if you look at his numbers, it was his worst game of the year so far. And again, I don't want to overreact to it, but when you see those two red zone interceptions in that game, you're just like, buddy, what are we doing? We cannot. Thank God this is happening against Michigan State because this cannot happen next week against Ohio State. All right. Let's get to the game that was happening in the state of Oregon yesterday, because, boy, what a barn burner it was down in Corvallis. Get to that next here. But first, Schultze, Sports Center update. Oregon State with a future Pac-12 matchup last night.
Yeah.
Against Colorado State. My God, they did their best to try and lose that game, though. They were up 21-10 in the fourth quarter. And we're able to let Colorado State crawl back into this and take a late lead, 24-21. Oregon State was then able to get their way downfield and tie it up with a 44-yard field goal, which, as we all know, college kickers, the fact that he made it to tie that game with 20 seconds left.
I think we're finally seeing a little bit of an uptick in skill in college kickers.
I was literally sitting here last week talking about how Ole Miss lost that game because they gave that kicker a chance at a 48-yarder. And yeah. I was like, not happy about that. And then Oregon State trots out their kicker for the 44-yarder. I'm like, dear God, kid.
I mean, not every...
Best of luck to you. And he sank it. It just got in, but he made it.
Not every one of these kids is Camden Lewis, thank God. Like, I really think that if they miss...
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
No, that is a good thing because they have a leg beyond 40 yards. Sure, they miss it, but, like, I do see, like, the length there. And I'm just, like, PTSD is an Oregon fan. Thank God that they have two kickers. It wasn't Zappington that hit that 50-yarder. It was, like, Andrew Boyle or some, like, transfer senior for Oregon on Friday night against Michigan State. So, like, they actually...
Yeah, that was like, wait, what?
Yeah, exactly. So they actually have kickers that can hit these lengths. And I've been watching other teams not necessarily always make them, but they have kids with the leg. So, 48-yarder, at least the coach has that option. It's a layer that college offenses have that... You know, the NFL, it's like a regular thing, but it's like few and far between. It's like college, it's like, well, maybe the best teams have that. Like, it's like you have it if you are well recruited, right? Like, you got one of the top 20 kickers in the country, essentially.
So Oregon State, they were doing their damnedest to try and lose this game. Gosh, the ESPN play-by-play, like, if you look at it on the website.
Oh, they messed up, dude.
Dear God, what is happening
here?
Yeah,
thank you. It's like a Colorado State, like, final touchdown to win the game, but it was Oregon State that scored that. Yet they put the Hankerson touchdown under Colorado State's, like, list of downs. It's very weird.
It says that the Oregon State scored 14-10 at the end of the first half, and then the score miraculously goes up to 30-10 at the end of the first half.
Don't care about us on the West Coast, do they, dude?
And then it rolls through 30-10 for another. And then Oregon State lost 9 points somehow.
Thank you. Yeah, what the hell's that about?
That's a first. I've never seen that before.
Well, and if you notice, Hankerson scored the game-winning touchdown before Giovanni McCoy ran for 4 yards. Like, that doesn't even make sense, like, according to their play-by-play.
Dear God.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Oregon State, I was impressed with Giovanni McCoy and his running ability yesterday. He ended up running for 91 yards, 3 touchdowns. That is something I feel like we have not seen with Oregon State much this year, is his ability to get out of the pocket and run the ball as much. I mean, the week before against Purdue, yes, 10 carries, 66 yards, but hell, even against Oregon a little bit, but I think that was more so him having to run for his life and do something there. But yesterday, God, he had one play where he ran for a touchdown and just lowered the shoulder against the safety of Colorado State and just bowled him over. And I was like, dude, I love that. Whenever you see a quarterback just lowering the shoulder and just bowling over a dude, I mean, you got to love that as a teammate of Javonte McCoy. But I was very impressed with his grit and how he came out in that game, especially running the ball. Passing, still a lot to be desired in the passing game for Oregon State. He only has two passing touchdowns this year. So, again, if Oregon State can get somewhat of a passing offense, then they can start to improve, get better. They barely escaped Colorado State. They should have ran away with that game towards the end. They were up 21-10 in the fourth quarter and weren't able to do it, let them back in it. But still, gritty win for Oregon State. I will say, though, absolutely embarrassing for you rushing the field after winning that game.
Yeah, the same day that Vandy like beats Alabama.
The same day when we have
the field.
Yeah,
you know.
Four or five games that are justified for rushing the field. Like, I'll even give Washington fan credit. Yeah, you should rush the field. You're beating a top 25 opponent, a top 15 opponent in Michigan at home, and you are unranked. That checks all the boxes for being able to rush the field. Oregon State fans should be absolutely embarrassed that you are rushing the field for an overtime victory against Colorado State where you were favored. You should have won that game in regulation, and you barely escaped a win.
Are those the same fans that S-talked the Ducks on Twitter or X leading up to the Civil War and then didn't even fill the damn stadium? Like, really, guys? I don't know. There's really nothing I can say to Beavers fans because at least the ones that rush the field are too stupid to understand what I'd be trying to say anyways. So,
wow.
Come on,
taking
dude.
A shot at their intelligence.
Well, why else would they be running onto the field after such a low...
Hey, that's a science school,
win.
All right? I'll give Oregon State. They probably do have smarter students than Oregon. Oregon is much more of the liberal arts, you know, business, journalism side. I mean, good law school at Oregon. But for the science-y type folks, I mean,
yeah.
Oregon State, the engineering folks, I give them the nod.
I bet you the engineers weren't the ones running onto the field. Bet you they were not.
They were probably in study hall.
No, they were probably back at their places drinking.
So and studying.
Ready to host the party. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Ready for that 6 a.m. test on Monday. Totally, Joe.
But Oregon State, they escaped the win. Escape with the win, rather. Who do they play next week? Taking a look. Oh, they go to Nevada next week. They'll go to Reno, take on the Wolfpack, and then they'll get UNLV in a couple weeks. Then they'll get Cal in 3 weeks at Cal. Very intrigued to see how that matchup goes.
That'll be a good matchup. Cal has the advantage at this point, I would say, if McCoy can't throw the ball. Although he can, it's just the Beavers' offense. You look his sophomore season at Idaho, he had 27 touchdowns compared to 7 interceptions. Like, he 71-yard long pass that season, then a 75-yard long pass in 2023. He can air it out. Javonte McCoy just has not been able to show his arm yet for Oregon State.
UNLV will take on Utah State next week, so they should win that. That will set up a 5-1 UNLV Rebs versus a hopefully 5-1 Oregon State team. Cal, their next couple of weeks, looking at their ACC schedule, which is still ridiculous to say out loud, they'll take on Pitt, and Pitt is looking good this year. They got to go to Pittsburgh. That is a long trip. That's a 12:30 kickoff.
Oh, it's
our
a
time.
Long trip. Can we stop with the flights being that long?
California to Pittsburgh is a long...
It's like a 4.5-hour flight.
It's literally from one coast to another.
I mean...
Now, granted, Pittsburgh is more inland than, you know, like Philly or something like that. But still, that you're going from the Pacific time zone to the Eastern time zone. That's a travel. All right.
Flights are comfy now, especially for like big old rich, expensive schools.
Yeah. Hopefully. Well, I don't know. I mean, Cal Berkeley, I don't know how they're taking care of their flight plans for their football team. I mean, hopefully they would be taking care of them. But it is Cal we're talking about.
I mean, they got that new ACC money. I don't know. You're probably right, Joe. I'm just wishfully thinking.
Cal's got Pitt and then NC State over the next couple weeks before they play Oregon State. I would love to see Cal pull the upset against Pitt. NC State is absolute shell of themselves compared to where they were to start the year. So intrigued to see what happens the next couple of weeks for all those teams as Oregon State continues to roll on through their schedule. All right, one more segment. I know what I want to do. We are seeing something for the first time in our lifetime. First time in, doing math off the top of my head. That's a scary thing. For the first time in 80 years, we are seeing something happen in college football. We get to that next year. Football Sunday. 10 of the fan. Jordan, we are witnessing something in the college football universe that we haven't seen since 1945. Do you know what that is?
Like 100-0 beatdown? Did that happen this weekend?
No.
Okay.
It involves two teams, two very important teams to this country.
Oh, I saw this stat, but I'll still let you tease it. I do know what you're talking about. We're talking about some military teams on the football field, correct?
1945. These two institutions, academies, whatever you want to call them, they just came off of a big win. They come back from Europe. They come back from the Pacific, and they're on a high. They feel like they can't be beaten, and that's what happened in 1945. The Army and Navy were 5-0. 1945. I mean, this is fresh off of World War II. Momentum is on their side. They get onto the football field, and they're like, "You can't stop us." That or the teams they were playing felt very grateful for what they had done over the last few years. And they're like, yeah, we're going to let Army and Navy just win this year. We're going to let them get some W's because they just defended our country. But 1945, Army and Navy started off the season 5-0. 2024, Army and Navy are 5-0.
Boom.
Which is, we are getting very, very dangerously close to a undefeated Army-Navy matchup. Well, I shouldn't say dangerously close because it's still like 2 months away. But how awesome would that be if we got Army-Navy undefeated to end of the year? And then they go into the match both 12-0 or whatever.
I mean, we're seeing parity in college football, like more and more. It's kind of crazy. And also the losses not really meaning as much. So if a team goes through an undefeated season, like I don't care who you are, that's damn impressive in this state of college football.
Now the one team that could screw this all up, and of course it would be on them to do something stupid like this and ruin this season for both of these teams. Both of these teams have to play Notre Dame.
The old independent Notre Dame.
And I think if Notre Dame wants to earn some points with football fans across the country, they need to throw this game, both of these games, against Army and Navy. I mean, Notre Dame, I'm sure they feel like they still have a chance at the college football playoff, which I'm sure they do. I mean, they're what? After that loss to Northern Illinois, they still have a 4-1 record. Very much could make the playoff.
Not really too high on Marcus Freeman, but yes, they could.
Neither am I. but they need to throw this game. They need to purposely lose to Army and Navy. I mean, looking at Army's schedule, the toughest opponent they have remaining outside of Notre Dame, I mean, they play Trent Dilfer's UAB Blazers next week, who just gave up 70 points to Tulane. They'll play East Carolina, Air Force, North Texas. They'll play UTSA. I mean, out of all those teams, I guess North Texas is the best team that they'll play remaining on the schedule. For Navy, they'll play Charlotte, Rice, South Florida. I guess South Florida is pretty decent. But they've kind of fallen off since their game against Alabama a few weeks ago that they took, that they played against them very well. The best team that they'll play is Tulane, but outside of that, I mean, pretty easy schedules besides the Notre Dame games for both Navy and Army. I just pray that, Notre Dame loses both those games and we get an undefeated matchup between the Army triple option running Army and, Navy.
Just see, I mean, you see in this like NIL world, I'm not sure Army and Navy like have taxpayer dollars that they can like put.
Are they even legally allowed to
do
that?
No, that's what I'm saying. It's like, I think that like Army and Navy's kind of competing with like a little bit of their legs cut out from under them in this current NIL world, yet still undefeated.
That's a tough sales pitch. Like, hey, yeah, we'll pay you to come to Navy, but I would have to be an active service member that, that's, you know, forget about that part. You know, yeah, you might have to get deployed at some point, but hey, we'll pay you this much.
But you know that those guys are, I mean, I think all those guys have either gone through some form of like basic training or whatever it is, like when you get to the initial academy, like, yeah, I think that'd be basic training or like a course that you basically for like 5 or 6 weeks, like kind of get like brought into being a soldier and trained how to do that. So, yeah, those guys are all tough as nails. Maybe you don't need to pay them.
Army Navy game Saturday, December 14th. So we're just over 2 months away from it. So they need to hold up their end of the bargain. Just keep winning, baby. Keep winning football games.
Seriously, I get locked into YouTube sometimes. I'm sure everybody does with like different rabbit holes. But one of the ones I like to do, Business Insider, they have a great channel where they will go and follow people like doing things like at, you know, different walks of life. And one of them is like basic training with the Army and the Navy and the Coast Guard. Like, go watch like a 10-20 minute video of what these kids go through in 6 weeks. Like, yeah, I see why they're 5-0. Like, these kids are, I don't have the balls to do what they do, even just going to, like, the BT. Couldn't do it.
Yeah, I'm good. I don't do well with authoritative figures.
Authorite?
Yeah. I'm also looking at the early top 25.
Oh, did that just come out?
I believe the coaches poll for USA Today, because top 25 drops tomorrow, AP, right?
Yeah, the AP always drops on Mondays, I believe.
Okay, gotcha. But the coaches poll.
You're thinking of like the college football playoff numbers. The rankings start like, I think after week 8, they drop them like late Sunday.
They do on like, I thought they do the college football playoff rankings on like Tuesday or something.
Oh, okay,
like that.
Maybe you're right.
Don't they do like a Tuesday show, I'm pretty sure.
Good old Tuesday. Yeah, that makes sense. Stretch it out as much as possible.
Make it like a broadcast.
like the NBA lottery?
Yeah. They do. Yeah, they it's do. The whole, they build on the suspense. But all right, week 7 college football coaches poll via USA Today. Fraudulent LSU number 10. They will not be number 10. By season's end. I do not believe in them whatsoever. Tennessee 9, Ole Miss 8, Alabama 7, Miami 6. So that means Oregon is a top 5 team according to the coaches poll. The top 5 goes as following according to the coaches poll. Penn State 5, Georgia 4, Oregon 3, Ohio State 2, Texas number 1. So according to the coaches poll, we are getting a top 3 matchup in Eugene this Saturday.
Hell yeah. Let's go. That's kind of what I was hoping for, because, yeah, you see Tennessee at number 4 losing, top-ranked Alabama losing, Texas off this week, I believe. So, yeah, they move up. Ohio State moves up. And I don't believe, I mean, some people are going to put Georgia still ahead of Oregon, but come on, Georgia's a one-loss team. Oregon isn't. Can we not? Can we not, please?
I agree with you. You know, what the AP decides to do, we'll wait and see, but I would not be completely shocked if they ended up doing that. But again, Georgia does have a loss. Oregon does not. They might just, you know, give the nod to the undefeated team. I mean, let's keep in mind, Georgia did also struggle against Kentucky, 13-12. I think they ended up getting that win over, Kentucky a few weeks ago. But keep in mind, Oregon struggled against Idaho and Boise State, which as we get further and further from that Boise State game, Oregon fans have to feel good, at least as far as what they did against Ashton Gentry, because he seems to just be running over every single team that he plays. My
He's
God.
He's just good. It is what it is.
My God. I mean, what does he finish with rushing yards wise? Is he going to finish with at least 2,500 rushing yards?
It's quite possible, sir. Like, yeah, it's the sky's the limit at this point for him.
He's on pace, right? Like, if we do the math, if we work on the math, he put up 62 points yesterday. Boise State, 186 from Gentry. He is at 1,031 yards through 5 games. Unreal. All right, that does it for Football Sunday. We will catch you next week, I believe, at 8 a.m.
Oh, yeah. We'll be here.
Go Seahawks.
Yay.
Appreciate you guys for that. Appreciate you as always, Jordan.
Love you, brother. Love you all.
And appreciate everybody out there listening. Rashad will hopefully be back next week, and we will be back next week, hopefully not hungover, and hopefully with an Oregon victory to go over as well. For Jordan Schultz and myself, Joe Fisher, everybody have a great Sunday. action of NFL football, and we will catch you next week at 8 a.m. Peace.